the Business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland, supporting businesses during National Enterprise Week this November 14th to 21st. The Business on RTE Radio 1 with Bank of Ireland. As Ireland's enterprise bank, we're lending to more businesses and farmers than any other bank.
Good morning. Coming up, the unlikely trio who built Intel, the steadfast Bible for Middle Ireland, and lining out for Ireland's toughest boss. You can contact us by text to 51551, by phone to 1850 715150, email thebusiness@rte.ie, or tweet to @thebusinessRTE. But first, we're joined now by a man who played a colourful role in Ireland's media landscape back in the 90s and noughties. He was an editor of McGill magazine, a founder of VIP magazine and New York Dog. He was also a regular on our TV screens. Here's a take from the RTE comedy series This Is Nightlife, where he played the character Johnny Handsome.
I mean, I was the first terrestrial anchor to deliver the news standing up. You just think about it for a second. Ann Doyle? Behind a desk. Alan Cantwell, behind a desk. T.G. Cahir, to my knowledge, behind a desk. Brian Dobson, behind a desk, still. Johnny Handsome, standing. No desk. Your call.
4 years ago, John Ryan founded Broadsheet.ie, a website that covers everything from political stories to items about cats stuck in trees. John, Broadsheet.ie, how has it been going? Is it making any money yet?
No.
That doesn't even sound like you're close.
No. And in fact, the profit motive wouldn't be our number one consideration. Personally speaking, if I can, you know, if I can get a sleep and a food and to do the site is enough at the moment. And really, it's not really about kind of the web summit and startups and buyouts and
yeah, I see. You describe it as a satirical news source for the bewildered. Are there many bewildered out there who need a bit of satire?
Well, that was the title we gave it at the beginning, but I think we're all a little less bewildered than we were certainly when it was launched.
And you're involved in it from Berlin. You live in Berlin now.
I live in Berlin.
Why Berlin?
Well, I can afford to live in Berlin and I can't afford to live here. So I'm in Berlin, but we're based in all the news centres, Bray, Cove in Cork and Derry and Donegal as well. So we have sort of contributors and bases everywhere.
At all the nerve centres.
All the nerve centres.
And why Berlin? That was an interesting choice. I presume it's a very nice city to live in, and if it is, a bit cheaper. But I mean, you wouldn't have to go as far as Berlin, would you, to find somewhere that's cheaper than Dublin to live?
Well, I suppose I wanted to go to a place where I didn't have any distractions whatsoever. I could literally just go on the site. And what I would do is I would work about maybe, I would be on the site about 16 hours a day. So it really doesn't matter where I live, but Berlin is cheap, but it's also a very tolerant place to live, and I feel a little bit more relaxed there.
Your career so far has been so varied and so colourful in some of the things you've done. Tell me a bit more about New York Dog. That was a magazine in New York for dog owners that was pretty successful, I think, for a while before eventually crashing and burning.
I went to New York. I'd sold my shares in VIP to myself and Michael O'Doherty had set up VIP. That had been very successful. Then we set up TV Now, and whilst it'd been quite successful, it just drained us and destroyed our kind of partnership and everything. So I sold out of that, and I had money in my life for the first time, but then proceeded to lose all of it, you know, within 13 months on a gay magazine and Stars and Sunday, which was a tabloid Sunday kind of VIP type magazine.
You were drawn to
the frothy celebrity end of journalism, you know, with Stars on Sunday, with VIP. Mm. Why was that? What was it about that that interested you? Was it you thought that there was money to be made there?
Well, yeah, I wasn't particularly, I mean, I wasn't drawn to it in, VIP, funnily enough, wasn't a frothy, it really wasn't. It was more of a, it had more Ireland's own than, you know, Grazia. You know, it was...
You're not going to tell me it was a serious celebrity magazine. I'm not sure there is such a thing as a serious celebrity magazine.
No, but it didn't just represent the East Coast. I mean, the sales were very big in the country. It would be Daniel and his mother. It would be Albert Reynolds at home. There were a lot of that aspect. It was Ireland, really. It wasn't just the ice bar or whatever. It was very successful, and what Stars and Sunday was just a desperate, pathetic attempt to replicate that success on a weekly basis. Because what I had done is, when I left VIP, I don't know when you've ever left an institution or anything, you just suddenly, the levels of insecurity, and I'm insecure to begin with, but were so massive that I had to be launching a title of some, you know, kind. So I launched GI, which was Gay Ireland. And
how long did that last?
Well, my God. it lasted in my hands for 6 months. And it was a kind of a vanity project, really. You know, in a way, I thought it would be good fun. And I loved the advertising campaign that we had prior to it. alone probably was worth the admission.
Was this the advertising campaign that had two guys in GAA gear snogging?
Yes. And you ask if from my highest point in my career, you know, at Kylie's there's a billboard, but there's kind of a turn.
Kylie's pub in Donnybrook.
And there was one of these billboards went up on the night, went up anyway, in the morning, as the commuters were driving into town. To see them looking up at the two, Kerry and a Dublin player, French kissing on the billboard, and the jaws just dropping as each car, what the?
This was a high point for you. You got a great kick out of that.
Well, it was. It was. I got quite a kick out of that, I'm afraid.
Stars on Sunday didn't last very long. Did you really think that commercially it could have stacked up?
Well, here's the thing. I set up GI with Melanie Morris, who's now with Image, and very, very quickly it was losing money, and it was all my money. So we sort of sat down and said, okay, I said, I've got a great idea. Why don't we do the VIP model, but every week as a Sunday sort of title, and we'd get it, you know, printed on whatever paper, and, you know, sell it for 50 cents, you know, euro, and have all the parties and the debs and all that stuff from the week. Because GI was more cerebral, and it was kind of like arty and great photography, and this was going to be the the cash cow that keeps the GI going. And it was just it didn't work. The paper it was printed on was you looked at it and your hands got filthy. it was so grimy. Everything about it was, it was executed poorly, and it was all my fault. And it was, but it was all then done on film for a documentary that RT were making. So it was just, once I'd finished all that, I'd had the failure of GI. I sold out VIP probably at the bottom of the market.
Yes.
I had lost everything then on this tabloid newspaper that everybody hated, and which I underestimated the entire everybody. You
know. And how much money did you lose on those ventures?
Hundreds of thousands, up to 650,000 on those two ventures within a year, just over a year.
And that was all of the money, was it, that you had got from selling your VIP magazine shares?
It was pretty much, because to go to New York, I had to sell my car. So, I mean, I had the aroma of just disaster, you know. Really what I tried to do was I tried to do the right thing with GI. I tried to do the wrong thing with Stars on Sunday to help you, you know. So I outfoxed my stupidity twice over. And so anyway, and I ended up in New York. I stayed in an apartment with Judith Grayson, this elderly Jewish lady who sort of her humor for this 12 months just kept me going. And I used to go to an internet cafe on Fifth Avenue. And that's where the New York dog began, because I'd been in Central Park and noticed the dogs were better dressed than I was, certainly. Certainly at that time. And I thought, they need a magazine. These people need a magazine.
The dogs deserve a magazine.
I know. Well, it was really about, I'd met a girl in Central Park and we were just talking about the dogs, and she began crying about her dog. And I said, wouldn't it be great if the New York Times did obituaries for dogs? You know, and then I just went, but, you know, a light bulb went off and we were away. So it began in the internet cafe. But just to give you an example of New York, going out of business in New York, I used this internet cafe and I had $100 of credit. And it was a huge place, like enormous. And full of computers, obviously. I came in one morning, and I would go there every day. And I came in one morning, the place was completely gone. Everything was gone. Every computer was gone. And the guy outside, I said, what on earth is that? He says, it's gone in a New York minute. And 5 years later, I realized what that New York minute was.
When and they had your $100 in credit as well.
Yeah, exactly. That was my main gripe. But the speed in which things happen in New York, the speed in which New York Dog started, and then the speed in which everything just
So you're sitting in Central Park. You have this idea from a conversation with a woman about her dog, and you think, that's it. I'm going to do a magazine. How quickly then? And you're broke. Quickly then do you turn that into a full colour printed magazine for sale?
Well, I think the idea itself was almost a joke. It was almost sold itself. So very quickly, I got some layouts done up of mock covers with Jennifer Aniston with her dog or some other guy with her dog, and I went down to a publisher down in Soho. And the minute people saw this, they were immediately kind of won over. And then I contacted Michael, who I'd worked with VIP. And
Michael O'Doherty.
Yeah. I said, why don't we design it in Dublin? Like, put it together in Dublin. Print it here. So that's what we did.
I remember seeing it. I was on a trip to New York around that time, and I picked up the magazine. I think it was in a hotel. I had no idea that you were involved in it, or there was even an Irish connection. I just picked up, I started flicking through the magazine, and there were dog horoscopes, there were You've Got P-Mail, there was Your Dog on an Atkins Diet, there were dog photo shoots haute couture. It was the maddest, craziest thing.
Yeah.
But immediately I noticed how well finished and polished and produced it was. I thought, my God, a lot of people must be buying this magazine.
Well, here's the thing. I think there was a dog kind of bubble at a dog clothing thing bubble, because everybody was setting up these small dog companies, little mom and pop companies in Iowa and Missouri, and suddenly, like, our first ad book was just full of these ads, like packed. But it later sowed the seeds of the magazine's demise later.
How?
Because when the credit crunch came in 2007, these little companies, you couldn't get them on the phone. I spent my last days of the New York Dog ringing, you know, Kentucky, Bow Wow Wow Inc., you know, looking for, you know, the money they owed us for the ads.
You know it's all over when that happens.
Yeah, it's pretty, game's up.
Do you think if the credit crunch hadn't happened, the magazine could have survived?
I think if I'd had more time to have found an investor or found somebody to save the magazine. But as I say, it's like in New York, about the New Internet Cafe. We just went, like, within about a week, you know, it was just gone. I was like almost paralyzed. I couldn't form sentences. I didn't know what to do.
But you must have been having a bit of a laugh about the whole thing as well, because it was so over the top. But what were the readers like, or the advertisers? How did they take to the doggy horoscopes and all of that? You've got P-Mail. I mean, you must have been laughing at them to a certain extent.
Yeah, well, at the beginning I was. I had no interest in dogs or animals of any kind. I must say, though, I am totally like a dog person. I totally understand it now. And I understood it then, but I understood it because talking to this woman, she said, it's my child, you know, and my child has died. And to these people, to dog owners, it is their children, and the love that they have for them. But the interesting thing with the New York dog is that our readers were very high, like Henry Kissinger's wife and people like that. It was kind of Park Avenue immediately. So it was very odd, you know, going into that kind of world. And
what were they like? What were some of those readers like? I mean, I read something about, they'd buy a ski jacket or something for their dog, that type of thing.
Oh, yeah. Henry Kissinger's dog was on kidney dialysis, which was costing God knows. I mean, he was in there every day.
Yeah, but that's different. You know, that's where he clearly is absolutely mad about his dog. But that's different to maybe buying it a ski jacket or that sort of thing. I mean,
I think, well, certainly the New York experience, you really do, like, a dog is probably the only thing that will be ever kind of kind to you on a consistent basis in New York. So I can see the need there.
You had some promotional dog. Was it Winky, a one-eyed chihuahua? What was that about?
Well, he wasn't a promotional dog. He was my dog. It was she, actually, Winky. She was a one-eyed teacup chihuahua. There were twins, and not sure what happened the other one, but I ended up with Winky. And when the business went, the person, the chihuahua rescue who I'd taken it off, this is again what it was, just took the dog back, thinking I was, because the business was going, that I was not fit to look after the chihuahua.
An unfit chihuahua owner, basically.
Yeah, I was absolutely heartbroken. So I had the bloody dog, and then Winky, rather, apparently died 3 weeks later.
So that was that.
That was that, yeah.
You came back from New York then. Presumably there were creditors to the magazine, people who, you know, were owed money, didn't get it. Was there any money left for them?
There was no money left for anybody. I went back to, I had no debts in Ireland because it was an Irish company. There was printers and stuff in the States, with everything. I've gone down with my ship on every case, so I'm dealing with that, or I'm trying to deal with that. But no, it was just devastating. I mean, it just destroyed me. I mean, like, it changed me, and it changed me in a good way, ultimately. But it really did.
In what way?
Profoundly changed. I was. It was frightening. I just couldn't deal with it. I mean, I went to a monastery.
Right.
Yeah, I traveled India just to get away, and I ended up in a monastery in a silent retreat for 6 months. So, so what I did was I managed to. I don't know if you've ever meditated for long periods.
No, I can't say I have.
It's really boring. And
I think it's supposed to be.
Yeah, but it makes you learn how to cope boredom, which I probably couldn't. And now it helped me with Broadsheet, which, you know, we've done for 4 years now. And I would have, a lot of it is very mundane tasks, you know, like putting asterisks and F words and, you know, moderating comments and for like long periods of time. So that.
What got you interested in journalism and the media in the first place? I know you recently, I think, gave a talk in DCU to journalism students saying how not to do it.
Yeah.
But you obviously feel strongly about it. You enjoy it.
Well, I would be personally a cautionary tale in terms of business or journalism. I wasn't a great journalist. I'm not a great businessman at all. But why I do it, why I'm doing it now, or why we're all doing it on the site, is that the public, the people out there, are really smart, and they've really got an interesting voice, and a lot of voices and a lot of different voices, and they're not this ungovernable, trolly, shouty mob that other people sort of seem to think they are.
Some of the ventures that you've done have in some ways been a bit early. You know, you've had a good idea that might have worked out better if you had done it a bit later. Why do you think that is? It's just the way you think about things?
Yeah, you're very right. You're right. I mean, the GI would probably work today. Maybe. I don't know.
Would New York Dog work today? I mean, I would have thought there's a reasonable chance that the pampered pooch market in Manhattan is bigger than ever.
No, New York Dog should never have gone.
But would you do it again?
That was the silliest part of it, really. You know, but that was just down to me. I was unable to cope with the pressures there that were there. I didn't have the tool set to deal with.
Would you go back and have another go at it?
Not at a dog magazine, no. But I would argue for anybody else to do it. They should do it, whoever.
Why would you not do it?
Because even at the time, as you say, like New York Dog, I mean, I wasn't, you know, dog horoscopes and things. I mean,
It wasn't your raison d'etre.
No, it wasn't. I love dogs, though, I do. You know? I actually become more fond of cats recently.
New York cat? Berlin cat?
Berlin cat.
Yeah, there's a publishing empire in the making. We've just started it.
I think, but Richard, just to sort of say, when I was younger, like started VIP, I wanted a big magazine publishing, whatever. I certainly don't want that now, and I certainly don't want to be the big guy anymore, or want to have any desire to be the big guy in any way, in any degree. If I can find somebody's keys in the morning, I'll have a happy day, you know.
That's where it's at.
It is kind of, to be perfectly honest.
John Ryan, thanks for joining us on the programme.